From Punxsutawney to York, Port Allegheny to Warren, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, many voters have taken advantage of mail-in voting. The left has embraced the process, and now conservatives are getting into the game. Cliff Maloney from the Citizens Alliance of America joins us with details. The successes and failures of presidential leadership can be very instructive. Dennis Powell is author of the new book, Leading from the Top: Presidential Lessons in Issue Management. He is here to discuss. And proposed legislation in Harrisburg would trample the free speech rights of Penns Woods residents. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Cliff Maloney from the Citizens Alliance of America in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. For decades, Democrats in Pennsylvania have enjoyed a sizable voter registration edge, but that advantage has fallen below 400,000 for the first time in recorded history. The Pennsylvania Department of State, which oversees elections in the Commonwealth, reports that there are currently 3,891,921 registered Democrats and 3,492,427 registered Republicans, cutting the Democrat voter registration edge to just 399,493 voters. A decade ago, that advantage was over 1 million voters. There are also 1.3 million voters registered in other parties or as independents. Lawmakers in Harrisburg are hard at work at crafting a new state budget that must be passed by the end of June. But City and State reports that the Commonwealth's structural deficit is complicating negotiations. Governor Josh Shapiro is pushing for massive spending increases and tapping into the state's rainy day fund. But that would only temporarily pay for recurring expenses for which there would be insufficient revenue in the long term. State Senate Republicans labeled the governor's proposed budget, quote, rainbows and unicorns, indicating it is unlikely most of the proposed new spending will receive legislative approval. The Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board continues to penalize liquor license holders who bucked the draconian policies the agency put into place during the COVID-19 pandemic. Many of the measures forced upon businesses by the PLCB have proven to have been ineffective and ill-conceived, yet the agency continues to take retaliatory actions against various license holders. Now bills have been introduced in both the state Senate and the state House to rein in the agency, prohibiting it from revoking or suspending any liquor license due to a failure to comply with COVID-19 orders from either then-Governor Tom Wolf or the Department of Health. The legislation would also force the agency to remove any disciplinary action already taken against license holders. In May of 2021, voters approved two statewide constitutional amendments that ended the abusive emergency powers the governor wielded during the pandemic. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Mail-in voting is embraced by the left and reviled by conservatives, but it is a fact of life, and now conservative groups are working to become more competitive in the process. Cliff Maloney is the chief executive officer of the Citizens Alliance of America, which is affiliated with the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. They are launching the Pennsylvania Chase to improve mail-in voting turnout. He joins us now with details. Cliff, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Cliff, we're going to talk about the specifics of how mail-in voting occurs here in Pennsylvania. We're also going to talk about the efforts of the Citizens Alliance of America, the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, to improve mail-in ballot turnout among conservative voters. Before we get to that, though, let's talk a little bit about what Citizens Alliance of America and the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania are. What do those organizations do?
Citizens Alliance of America, for the past 4 years, our number one project has been something called the Liberty State Project. And the ultimate goal of that is to go in to different states across the country and really try to work to get conservatives across the finish line. We've got a different rating system. We call it the pledge, where we keep people in either good standing, objectionable standing, or bad standing. And we work to advance the ideas of freedom. And so we're currently doing that in four states. Our largest and I'd argue most important state is obviously Pennsylvania. But I will share with you that in 2022, one of the things that we started to notice is we might win some big primary race, but then all of a sudden what would happen is the leftists really have mastered the idea of mail-in ballots. And so in 2022, we just came to find that, unfortunately, conservatives were lacking when it comes to a plan on how to get conservatives across the finish line. And so as much as we love to focus on primary elections and getting real conservatives in, it has become something that we have to figure out. And so I am excited to say that in 2024, we are going to be launching a program called the Pennsylvania Chase, and we're going to focus on mail-in ballots, knocking on doors across Pennsylvania, because we do think that that is the biggest problem that we need a solution to.
It's actually been 4 years now since we've had no excuse mail-in balloting in Pennsylvania. It came about in 2020 during the whole COVID pandemic here, Cliff. But when you talk about mail-in balloting, a lot of times conservatives are a little bit suspicious of it and don't think that it's necessarily all that secure. How do we overcome a resistance by conservatives to use that method to vote?
So I always lead by telling people I hate mail-in ballots, right? We'll put that on the billboard and I'll stand by that. That's not the problem, right? So I'm a big fan of single-day voting. I'm a big fan of no new voter registration on election day. I'm a big fan of paper ballots, no machines, and hand counts, right? I would argue we should have the 1980s types of elections when everybody believed they were secure. That's not the reality that we live in. And the problem, and what you said is correct, Loam, and a lot of conservatives kind of object. And to them, I say, great, vote on election day, because they're not the target audience, right? People that are paying attention are not the folks that we're trying to reach. The leftists realized after 2020 or during 2020 with the rule changes, out of the roughly 3 million lefties that are registered versus 3 million on the right, there's about a million in each of those camps that are what we would call disengaged, low propensity voters. And so you're not trying to move election day voters to vote early. What you're trying to do is find folks that'll vote for your team or vote for the conservative candidate, and you're trying to get them to actually request a ballot and then submit it, because they're very much, they're not likely to vote. And so that's what you're trying to do. And I think that lefties understood this, and liberals have weaponized this in a way that unfortunately conservatives haven't. And so when I talk about what we're doing with the PA Chase, I mean, we're going to knock on 500,000 doors. We're going to hire over 100 paid ballot chasers full time. And remember, in Pennsylvania, we have 50 days of mail-in ballot, 5-0. People are always stunned when I tell them that, but that is the new rule. Counties can send it out 50 days before election day. And so instead of complaining about it, we need a solution. So I just want to reiterate, I'm not a fan of mail-in ballot. I love to vote on election day, and I recommend anybody does that. The objective here is to target those that are likely not going to be voting, and they're very aligned with conservative values. The radical liberals do the same thing, but they find that they just don't make excuses. They push through it.
The process of applying for and voting by mail here, Cliff, a lot of folks are not familiar with it, which also may be one of the reasons why it doesn't get utilized. Would you take us through the steps of how, if I'm wanting to vote by mail, how would I even go about starting the process?
Right. So any registered voter in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has to request a mail-in ballot. So it is very different than any other state. And, you know, certain states, like out west, you see a lot of states, every voter gets mailed a ballot, right? So it's very different. In Pennsylvania, I'd say we really have three phases. The first phase is you have to register to vote, right? If you're registered, phase two is you need to request a mail-in ballot. You can do that online, and I can provide that link and get people there. And then the third phase is you have to submit your ballot. And so if you're an operative or a grassroots volunteer, somebody looking to make a difference, you have to think in terms of those phases. You know, right now we're kind of in a blend of phase one and phase two, meaning there are certain groups out there attempting to register voters. There are certain groups out there attempting to get people to request their mail-in ballot. And that third phase is what we're owning at Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, which is the chase, right? Actually getting people to submit their ballots. So what's interesting, Loman, is a lot of the liberal groups spend millions of dollars mailing the request forms pre-filled out to voters right now that are in that universe. And so they're kind of dominating and drowning phase two in a way that just conservatives haven't been able to match. They just haven't. I mean, if you look at the score, they just haven't. Conservatives typically get 20% of all mail-in ballots compared to 80% of support for liberal candidates when you just look at mail-in ballots. And I just don't think any conservative can win statewide with those numbers. And so our objective is to get that number from 20% for the conservative to 33%. We think if that happens, we think that Pennsylvania can be competitive again.
We are presently in the primary election phase of this year's election process in Pennsylvania, Cliff, and we have a primary coming up here on the 23rd of April. For folks who want to vote by mail, assuming they've already registered, if they haven't registered, they need, as you just pointed out, to do that right away. If they want to vote for mail, can they get on a list yet for the primary? And if they do so, does that automatically put them on the list for the general election, or do they have to do that for each primary in general?
So if folks go to vote.pa.gov, they can access all that. They can see what they need to do to apply for a mail ballot. But in PA, you have an option if you sign up for the year where you pretty much can guarantee yourself to get a primary election ballot as well as a general election ballot. Now, I think most folks are selecting that. You know, I don't think people are signing up to be a mail-in voter and only selecting the primary. As the numbers have shown, it's typically people are signing up for both. But that's typically how it works. If you go there, you can check your registration status, make sure you're registered, and then they will let you apply for a mail-in ballot. Now, there was just a big court case that just came down that pretty much reversed a big rule that one of the controversies in Pennsylvania was that if people didn't put the date on their ballot, their mail-in ballot, whether it would count or whether it would not. And currently the court, I know it's going back and forth, but currently the court has ruled that they will not count, which I do think is a big win for whichever candidate is getting less mail-in ballot votes, right? So I'm not a fan of anybody's vote not counting, but I do think that obviously the liberals have pushed to make it as lenient as possible because they're winning by 80 to 20. So they want as many mail ballots as possible. I do believe the state has made it a little more obvious that the date has to be on these ballots. But we are talking about thousands of ballots that are potentially either going to count or not count based on this rule change.
We will advise anybody seeking to use a mail-in ballot, read the instructions very carefully and follow them to the letter because this is a highly technical process. Now, Cliff, in terms of the Pennsylvania chase, what sort of technology are you using to help activists who want to try to improve voter turnout by mail-in balloting?
Before I dive into tech, just one big note for all your listeners that the completed application must be received by each voter's county office by 5 o'clock on April 16th. So that's the deadline for the application, right? And just to be clear, not the actual ballot, but if you're looking to still apply, you've got just over 2 weeks to get that in, and then your deadline to return it is 8 p.m. on the 23rd, meaning election day or primary day. As for technology, Loman, that's a great point. I think the left has really dominated conservatives when it comes to understanding how to kind of put together data and understand how we use tech to make things easier for volunteer and grassroots efforts. So I'm happy to tell you we've just announced the Pennsylvania Chase app. If people go to the Apple or Android store and they search PA Chase, they will find the app. Folks can use that. They can download that. So the technology we've got is cutting edge. The app is easy to use, and I recommend folks download that in their store to search PA Chase.
We have been talking with Cliff Maloney, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Citizens Alliance of America, talking about getting conservatives to utilize mail-in balloting. Cliff, if we have folks who would like additional information, what is the website they can go to access that information?
Absolutely. Just pachase.com.
Cliff Maloney from the Citizens Alliance of America. Cliff, thank you for being with us.
Appreciate you, Loman. Thanks so much for being a patriot. Take care.
Leading from the Top, Presidential Lessons in Issue Management is a new book that examines how presidents have handled major policy initiatives and dealt with wars and other crises. Dennis Powell is author of the book. He joins us now for a discussion. Dennis, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Dennis, in this book, what makes it different than other retrospective or even historical views of presidential administrations? How is this a little bit different?
Well, it's not a history book. The book teaches a very complex business process, which is strategic management and leadership, but it uses presidents of the United States to teach these lessons in a very easy to understand way.
As we look at the book, you have it divided into different types of categories. And when we talk about presidential leaderships and how they managed various issues, various situations, they were confronted, obviously, with a very wide array of situations throughout the centuries. Talk a little bit about how context matters whenever a president is trying to manage an issue or a situation.
Well, the context in which, like, for example, let's take Franklin Roosevelt. He's managing the New Deal. He did a lot of things right to get the wind at his back. For example, the president asked the voters permission to fundamentally change the relationship between the American people and their federal government. He did it in his 1932 speech in San Francisco. He did it in his inaugural address. He did it as his first address to Congress. There was no surprise someone who was going to be a transformational president. What we try to do is we try to take the times in which the president was about to implement the plan. So we go back to the Great Depression, the high unemployment rates. That all gives context to what we're trying to do here. And then we look at the president, how he addressed the issue, the strategy he used, and whether he succeeded or failed, what we can learn from what he did. Now, Roosevelt did well at getting the wind at his back by asking permission. He did well by controlling the narrative by using a relatively new phenomenon at the time, which was radio, to do fireside chats and keep the American people informed, up to date, and to eliminate. And he also made his first move the right move by closing the banks and showing people that this will work. We can reestablish faith in our economy and faith in our future.
Another president who faced a lot of challenges was Lyndon Johnson. He had his Great Society that he attempted to implement, but he also had the Vietnam War. In your book, do you touch upon how President Johnson handled either one or both of those situations?
Well, what he did right, President Johnson, he was a great politician, as anybody who knows Lyndon Johnson. He was a master politician. He outworked everybody. He was extremely focused. He knew what he wanted to get, and he knew how to get it. But what he did is he used the Kennedy assassination sort of as a springboard. He took all of the goodwill from the Kennedy administration, and he parlayed that into building momentum behind his presidency. So when you think about Johnson, one of the key moves he made was he didn't fire anybody from President Kennedy's cabinet. He kept the team together, and this sent a message that his was a continuation of the Kennedy presidency. One of the things he wanted to do was civil rights, and he used all the goodwill from the Kennedy presidency to sort of as an honor to the president to pass this great legislation that he supported, the Great Society. That's, I mean, the Great Legislative Great Society. Vietnam was something different. In Vietnam, we learned lessons. If you're a leader and you go to your board or you go to your key stakeholders and say, I need a longer leash, I need to do more, they'll trust you and trust you and trust you and trust you and keep making your leash longer and longer and longer. But at some point in time, you have to succeed. I believe in 1968, he simply ran out of things to talk about. When you run out of runway, you're left with nothing left to do.
Another president who faced a war situation was George H.W. Bush. Yes. And he handled that in a very unique way. Want to talk about that for a minute?
Well, part of being a strategic manager is you understand the problem. And George H.W. Bush understood the problem of Saddam Hussein moving into Kuwait as well as anybody we could have had in office at that point in time. He understood how to put together a coalition, and he understood how to set goals. Now, his goal was simply to get Saddam Hussein's army out of Kuwait. That's all that the coalition he assembled would have accepted. So as a leader, when you look at George H.W. Bush, what you learn is that set goals, set achievable goals, understand your stakeholders, and don't go beyond what your stakeholders want. It was not his job, not his mandate, or not the will of his coalition to destroy Saddam's army. What he understood, he anticipated the consequences of that action.
Leaders have learned a lot over the years, and not only in politics, but we take a look at the strategy and tactics that you talk about in this book. We talk about how they understood the context. If you put all of that together, and somebody reads this book, Leading from the Top, Presidential Lessons in Issues Management, what is the relevant to somebody who's a leader today? Not necessarily the president of the United States. Very few people get to do that. But there are a lot of folks who lead businesses large and small. What can we learn from this?
Well, we all face issues. We all face disruption. We all face change. And if you read this book and some of the supplemental materials I've created since the book, what you'll learn about are red lights and green lights about when managing an issue, what works and what doesn't work. Because these lessons, they kind of stick with you, because most people who read this book remember the events that I look at, remember the presidents, remember kind of vaguely what happened. And now I'm putting it into a context of strategic management and leadership. And these are completely applicable, like knowing the length of your runway, asking permission before undertaking tremendous change. All of these, measuring the length of your leash, controlling the narrative, having the ability to persuade and build support behind what you want. These things are all like common sense, but when I put them in the context of presidents, they're much easier to understand and therefore easier to apply.
Dennis Powell is author of Leading from the Top, Presidential Lessons in Issues Management. Dennis, if folks are intrigued, interested in perhaps getting a copy of this book to learn a bit more about presidents and how they've handled issues and managed them, where can they go to find the book?
It's available wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available in all kinds of formats, whether you want to buy the book itself or put it on a mobile device. You can reach me at Massey, MasseyPowell.com. It'll explain everything we do in helping people not only get the book and understand the book, but also apply the book to their needs as leaders in business and industry.
Dennis Powell, the book, Leading from the Top, Presidential Lessons in Issues Management. Dennis, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Trampling free speech rights would be the outcome of proposed state legislation that would hamper the ability of residents to participate in advocacy organizations. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
The First Amendment secures freedom of speech, or freedom of expression. The founding of our country and the drafting of our Constitution guaranteed this most distinguished right to free speech because it is a keystone of our country, which, when upheld, makes our democracy thrive. Freedom of expression denotes the inherent liberty to convey beliefs and thoughts without governmental interference, retaliation, coercion, or censorship. While speech typically includes verbal communication of these beliefs, expression encompasses various modes of conveying ideas, including speech, music, advocacy, and other creative endeavors. In our day-to-day lives, expression oftentimes manifests itself as the right to associate or volunteer with groups and organizations that promote ideas that you believe in. Freedom of speech reflects America's inception. From citizen protests during the Boston Tea Party to anonymous writings in the Federalist Papers, individual expression played a pivotal role in shaping our nation. In our current era, the prevalent threat of cancel culture poses a similar threat to free expression. But the threat of cancel culture doesn't discriminate based on your partisan ideology. All Pennsylvanians can become victim to the threat of cancel culture. Recent Harrisburg legislation poses such a threat to free speech. Civic leagues and social welfare organizations serve as platforms for individuals to voice their opinions and unite with like-minded advocates. Some of these groups focus on contentious issues, making them susceptible to cancel culture's impact, particularly regarding matters such as reproductive rights, the right to life, and the right to bear arms. Individuals who support these causes expect their privacy to be safeguarded. However, if certain actors in Harrisburg get their way, your participation in such organizations could lead to unwanted exposure to cancel culture. Alternatively, there's widespread bipartisan and bicameral support for the Personal Privacy Protection Act, which aims to safeguard individuals' privacy and civic engagement. Rather than jeopardizing thousands of Pennsylvanians' free speech rights, legislative focus should be on protecting the privacy of all Pennsylvanians and their civic participation. Free expression underpins American self-governance. It serves not only as a catalyst for truth discovery and progress, but also as an indispensable component of democracy. Most importantly, it facilitates discourse, persuasion, and consensus building among citizens. Casey Maddox, Americans for Prosperity's Vice President of Legal and Judicial Strategy, puts it best. You can't self-govern without the people being able to speak to one another and persuade one another of things. Effective self-governance necessitates unfettered dialogue and persuasion among citizens. Without free speech, Pennsylvanians cannot fully exercise their right to shape government policies and hold elected officials accountable, which we know is a necessity in this day and age. As Frederick Douglass emphasized in his 1860 address, free speech is a sacred right that empowers individuals to challenge injustice and tyranny. He articulated it best, "Liberty is meaningless where the right to utter one's thoughts and opinions has ceased to exist. That of all rights is the dread of tyrants. It is the right which they first strike down. They know its power." Every American has the right to organize around their beliefs and advocate for causes important to them, thanks to the First Amendment's protection of free expression. This freedom of expression amplifies the voices of diverse groups and drives societal progress. In the face of threats to our rights, such as the right to privacy and freedom of expression, it is imperative to defend all rights to prevent their erosion. Threats to free speech exist in both Harrisburg and Washington, and it's never been more important than now for you to amplify your voice in defense of the First Amendment. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to join our movement to support free speech and protect your right to free expression. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJSM-FM in Martinsburg, WQZS-FM in Myersdale, along with WMSS-FM in Middletown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.